From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on Ozarks, a task force on race is working in Harrison to discuss the past, present, and future of that city. And a student organization at the University of Arkansas is working to make sure a small town in Belize will have an ample supply of safe water in the future.
And our tech ambassador, Tyrell Dennison, is back to help us understand the issues behind net neutrality.
First, the Arkansas House of Representatives is set to vote on an appropriations bill today that would fund the Department of Human Services Division of Medical Services. That means lawmakers will decide on whether or not to fund the state's private option form of Medicaid expansion. In an interview with Roby Brock of Talk Business Arkansas, two state representatives from Saline County shared their views on how they expect it to fare. Republican Representative Andy Mayberry said he expects funding for the health insurance program that provides thousands of poor Arkansans with inexpensive coverage to be renewed. And he agreed with recently proposed changes to the program.
Some of the amendments I think are great. They were issues that I saw with the private option to begin with. For instance, copays. When I initially voted to fund the private option, I was under the understanding that there would be copays involved and that everybody would have some kind of skin in the game. And so to seek a waiver for that, to be able to allow us to be able to do that, I think that's a wonderful thing.
About 100,000 Arkansans have gained health coverage through the private option so far this year. We'll have more about the private option and the expected vote in the House in the second half hour of today's Ozarks at Large.
Meanwhile, supporters of the private option are getting a big boost today. Talk Business Arkansas is reporting Senator Jane English is switching her vote from a no to a yes. If all other senators remain on the same side of the issue, the private option would have enough support in the Senate to pass. Talk Business Arkansas quotes Senator English as saying she's switching her vote after receiving undying support from Governor Beebe to enact changes in the state's workforce education and training programs. The senator says she thinks health care and jobs training are connected.
That is exactly what I want to have happen, is that we get to the place where we turn the system upside down and we provide a really good workforce system here that people can access, and that they end up with the kinds of skills so that we don't have to have everybody on food stamps. We don't have to have everybody in a private option. That they have the resources to be able to go out and buy their own insurance, wherever it may be.
She says she received support for changes to workforce training from the governor and his cabinet. Senator English is a former director of the state's Workforce Investment Board and a former project manager at the Arkansas Economic Development Commission.
I went to work for the Department of Economic Development, what was AIDC, in 1984. And from that point forward, my goal was to find a better way and more economic growth for the people here in the state of Arkansas. And so for me, it's about everybody in the state, all the people in my district, but it's also about everybody, every other legislator's citizens in their district. It's about the state. It's not just about my little place.
The Senate needs 27 votes in support of the private option for the funding measure to pass in that chamber.
Voters in Crawford County will again have the opportunity to fund a new county jail. Last night, the Crawford County Quorum Court approved sending two separate measures to voters on May 20th. The first, a half-cent sales tax increase, would fund a new jail that would house more than 250 inmates. The second request would increase sales taxes in the county by 0.25% to help fund law enforcement operations. County officials say the current jail is overcrowded. If voters approve the increases, Alma and Van Buren would have sales tax rates over 10%, among the highest in the state.
The University of Arkansas Press is officially under new leadership. Mike Beaker has been named as the director of the press, succeeding Larry Malley, who retired in December. Beaker has been with the press since 2004 and is currently treasurer-elect of the American Association of the University Presses. The University of Arkansas Press was founded in 1980. Beaker becomes just the third director of the press since its inception.
The Arkansas Razorback swimming and diving team begins participation in the SEC conference meet today in Athens, Georgia. Arkansas finished sixth in last year's meet, but could improve on that mark after a 9-1 record in dual meets this year, including a 3-1 record in SEC dual meets. The meet will conclude Saturday.
Clouds are expected tonight. Lows in the upper 30s in northwest Arkansas, lower 40s tonight in the Arkansas River Valley. Should be cloudy tomorrow with highs in the mid to upper 60s. Wednesday night, 20% chance of showers with lows in the mid 50s. This is Ozarks at Large. Last fall, the city of Harrison in Boone County, population 12,000, began to take pragmatic steps to rebrand itself. The Ozarks community, roiled by race riots in the early 1900s, had become a magnet for organized hate groups. That presence has faded, and the city is becoming culturally diverse. Last week, however, a dozen white patriots came out to mark Harrison as their territory. And as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a local race task force is working to reconcile the past and think about the future.
When Jeff Crockett became mayor of Harrison 3 years ago, he knew he had inherited a public relations nightmare.
There are a lot of black people, because of the Klan presence that has been national media, think that we're a bad place to come to. They're afraid to stop here. They don't want to stop here. They don't want any confrontation.
By Klan, Mayor Crockett means Tom Robb, whose reputation far exceeds reality. The Michigan native, now an elder, has lived for several decades just outside of Harrison city limits, selling Klan memorabilia, podcasting, and hosting family rallies. But when you search Harrison on the internet, Klan stuff pops up. So Mayor Crockett's working to optimize Harrison's web presence, along with promoting this city as a friendlier and open place. But things bogged down last October when a big racist message appeared on a yellow billboard along one of Harrison's major thoroughfares.
We started doing some research on it, trying to figure out where it came from, why it was there. The sign company naturally was keeping the whoever paid for the sign anonymous.
The message reads, "Anti-racist is code word for anti-white, and it's inflamed the community. Protests were staged, and a month later it was defaced, leading to the arrest of a local man, Chad Watkins. He's been charged with misdemeanor vandalism. Word of the arrest somehow leaked out before it was made public, sensationalized in the media and racist blogs, creating even more of a mess for the mayor. And this spring, things will further escalate when Watkins' case goes to court."
He has hired an attorney out of Little Rock to represent him. And also the Southern Poverty Law Center has jumped in and decided that they would offer some assistance in his defense.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, a nonprofit civil rights group based in Montgomery, Alabama, monitors hate groups across the United States. SPLC says extremism has surged since the election of an African-American president. But if you look closer, much of it's internet bluster, especially here. In the meantime, Mayor Crockett took countervailing measures against the problem billboard.
Yes, I have some billboards that are located around town that I own, that I lease out to people. And I told the task force that if they wanted to decide on what they wanted to put up, that I would put a billboard up on one of my billboards. They decided what they wanted to put up, and we put two of them up.
Those billboards, which have been up for several months, read, "Love Your Neighbor." They've not been defaced so far. The love billboards are sponsored by the Harrison Community Task Force on Race Relations, of which the mayor is a member. The task force recently hosted a forum in honor of Black History Month. Co-coordinator Lane Ragsdale spoke about race violence in America, while colleague Carolyn Klein talked about Harrison's legacy to a packed room at Boone County Public Library. And sitting in the front row, closely watching, was none other than Tom Robb, who visibly trembled when he stood up to publicly challenge the women for the first time.
To imply that I'm promoting hatred, or imply that I'm trying to drive people out, I find appalling, and I think I deserve an apology for that.
No one had accused Tom Robb of hate-mongering, so no apology was made. His mission, he told us before the forum, is to save the white race from genocide via his organization, the Knights Party.
But I do have a concern about the growing immigration to this country, no attempts to halt it. The white race in this country is, and in Europe too, is at zero population growth.
The real Ku Klux Klan that terrorized and lynched thousands of African Americans a century ago also preached against race mixing. But Tom Robb and his family of followers spend their days chattering to each other online. That's about it. A dozen of them also turned out to harass task force members at the forum. Police were on hand just in case. Brian Bryant, who's just moved to Harrison, said that diversity breeds crime. His three-year-old son stood by his knee, carefully listening.
Would you be as interested in being an advocate for not the hundreds of blacks that were dispelled from Harrison, but the millions of white people that have been dispelled from every major city in America.
Tom Robb's grandson-in-law, Freeland Dunscombe, also spoke up.
It's only white countries where people get called racist, and then as penance for their sin of being white, they have to bring in tens of millions of non-whites into their country.
Dunscombe and a few others proudly wore big yellow stickers emblazoned with that controversial billboard message, but none of them would admit to posting it. You could tell the Harrison Community Task Force members by their black T-shirts with big red hearts that said, "Love your neighbor." For more than a decade, they've traveled across Arkansas, networking with African-American groups, making their case at state forums, such as the Clinton School of Public Service and public schools, and hosting events like the Martin Luther King Jr. Commission Nonviolent Youth Summit held last year. Another's planned in Harrison April 2nd. And Task Force facilitator Patty Methvin says their positive billboard campaign is a very public response to the recent white patriot backlash.
The billboard has "Love Your Neighbor" and then the quote by Martin Luther King Jr. that says, "Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that." And so we love that quote. We think it sums up basically what we've been doing all along anyway.
And when she was challenged by white separatists during the forum, Task Force presenter Lane Ragsdale firmly but kindly ordered them to stand down.
And our mission is that we know Harrison as a community where people of all races can live, work, and worship together in peace and harmony, and we envision a time when our community is similarly perceived by all.
Lane Ragsdale says proof that their message is working is the town's growing diversity.
Often in our community, we have the image out in the world that we're an all-white community. But according to our census populations, there's about 700 minorities that live in Harrison and about 2,000 in our county. So when we say love your neighbor, we really mean love your neighbor.
One individual is Alice Sanders, the 65-year-old African-American evangelist from Mississippi, settled in Harrison 4 years ago as a sort of diversity missionary.
My experience has been seeing that whatever was in the history of the town of Harrison is not in the hearts of the people.
Sister Sanders says that racism can be found anywhere in America, but she's not looking for it in Harrison.
I see people in the marketplace that embraces me with a big smile, you know, or kind words. Matter of fact, I was in a store shopping one day, and this little lady walked up to me. She was an elderly lady, and she kissed me on the cheek right in that store. She says, "I love you."
Harrison Community Race Task Force Forum organizer Carolyn Klein says she welcomes any and all white patriots to come forward to dialogue.
We are going to have people who disagree with us, and I'm glad that they speak up when they do disagree with us. Otherwise, we would assume that everyone agreed with us, and we would not be able to make near the progress.
And Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett says his administration's monitoring the situation and looks forward to learning the identity of the racist billboard sponsor.
Hopefully through this trial of the guy that defaced the billboard, the person that paid for that billboard will come to light when he's subpoenaed to court. And when that happens, maybe that will prevent some of the future stuff from happening.
The PR battle over Harrison's soul, which is attracting international press now, will grind on, fed by patriot bloggers like Michael Weaver. He operates the White Information Network, but is sort of an apologist about it, a kinder, gentler racist.
I am pro-white. However, I'm not a supremacist by any means. I do not hate other races as people. I just simply stand for the interest of white people.
And to prove his point, Weaver says, he's planning on moving to Harrison. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more about the work of the Harrison Community Task Force on Race Relations, you can find them on Facebook.
In about 10 minutes, the two sides of net neutrality.
That's part of what net neutrality is obviously against, is that kind of favoritism. What happens then is people who are content providers that don't have the same power to make deals with the big ISPs that Netflix has, their content becomes kind of second class citizens.
Our tech ambassador, Tyrell Dennison, explains how big providers and little ones would be affected by changes to the net neutrality landscape. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, the story of ballerina Tanaki LeClaire, paralyzed by polio, muse to Balanchine and Jacques d'Amboise.
The tragedy of Tanny is epic. Epic. She was destroyed as a dancer.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
NPR's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. There is a small community in Belize called More Tomorrow. The town is located in the interior of the country along the Belize River, about 9 miles from the capital city of Belmopan. Aaron Cooper, an honors chemical engineering student at the University of Arkansas, was in More Tomorrow last month. She says the town is a small, tropical place.
There's only one road into the village, which during the rainy season gets pretty flooded. But once you come around a corner and then all of a sudden it's right there, I think there's 29 homes and they are kind of like ramshackle, just on the ground. And there's one school and then a preschool, a church, and soccer field.
Aaron is part of a student group, Arkansas Engineers Abroad. And that group is working with the residents of More Tomorrow to build a water tower that will provide the town with a steady, sustainable supply of safe water. More Tomorrow often struggles with a lack of water. And during the rainy season, many households do catch rainwater, but that water is coming off tin roofs, speckled with bird droppings, and considered unsafe. When the 30-foot water tower is complete, it will hold 2,500 gallons of water. Michael Reinisch, another member of Arkansas Engineers Abroad, says the water will be pulled from a deep well. At 64 feet, he says that well is more than three times as deep as the current wells in More Tomorrow.
So it draws from a deeper aquifer that's cleaner, first of all. So, but is it actually clean? If we find out it's not clean, then we will have to put in something like a sediment filter or some kind of biological filter that will kill off any pathogens. We will just have to test the water next time that we go. We expect this to be done, and then we will test the water and clear it to be used.
Reinisch, a junior honors chemical engineering student from Dusseldorf, Germany, has been to More Tomorrow twice. The project began 3 years ago. Kimberly Cribbs, another honors chemical engineering student at the University of Arkansas, is president of Arkansas Engineers Abroad. She says the relationship between the students and the village was inaugurated when another student visited More Tomorrow on a mission trip.
And from there, it's just been a huge process of trying to get the water tower done. It's about a $35,000 project, and the end is finally near now, all these years later. We just need 4,000 to raise, and then once we get that funded, we can give them the green light and we can have the water tower built in 4 weeks.
The plan is to raise the final $4,000 in time to go back in May. On 5 previous trips, University of Arkansas students have built the foundation for the water tower, installed piping, and drilled the well. Along with the tower, the project includes latrine, drainage, and educational components. Kimberly Cribbs and Aaron Cooper from Pea Ridge and Liberty, Missouri, respectively, say the work is intended to be a long-term solution.
They had a lot of waterborne and mosquito-borne diseases, and so when you're walking around the village, the highest part of the village is the road, and there's no drainage in place. And so, like, the houses, they're just kind of like in the middle of puddles, some of them. And so there's a lot of, like, malaria, and they complained about hepatitis and fungal infections. And so this is where, like, after we finish the water tower, that's just the first phase of the project. And we really want to help the health of the community. And so that's why we're taking on a drainage and latrine component to the project now.
We're trying to move past the very, like, mission trip aspect of, like, you go in, you build a water tower, and then you leave. We're trying to help the community go from where they are to full-scale sustainability with their health.
The $19,000 already raised toward the needed $23,000 has come from several sources. Local churches and civic groups have contributed, and the Clinton Global Initiative has given money the past 2 years. The College of Engineering at the university has helped with funding for transportation for the students. Erin Cooper, who just 8 months ago was in high school, says her visit to More Tomorrow just last month was an unexpected part of her freshman year of college.
I did not imagine that I would be here. It kind of just snuck up on me. I saw a poster that was like, Arkansas Engineers Abroad, come to the meeting. And that was like the first week of school, and I went just to see what it was about because I was like, hey, I'm an engineer. I want to go places. And it's been life-changing.
Kimberly Cribbs, the president of Arkansas Engineers Abroad, says the organization does have a faculty advisor. It's required to be a registered student organization. But she says the bulk of the work, organization, and direction is student-led. She says the work they're doing now in Belize will probably have a lasting impact beyond the community of More Tomorrow.
Being part of this project, it's opened a lot of opportunities for, I guess, me and others in Arkansas Engineers Abroad to realize that community development work is something that there is a need for. And if we really push for having that sort of career path, I think we can make it happen beyond just college. And so that's kind of what we're, hopefully there'll be opportunities for people who want to continue this work in AEA to transition to that sort of role in a career.
The students are anxious to travel back to More Tomorrow to help complete the water tower in the spring. Michael Reines says their optimism is shared by the residents of the town. Optimism, apparently, is part of More Tomorrow's legacy. Michael says during one of his trips to Belize, the local pastor explained the legend of how the town's name was selected.
There was once a man, and he was walking with someone else, and so he had a gold coin in his hand, and he threw it into the lake. And then the other guy was like, why would you do that? You know? And then the guy said, well, there'll be more tomorrow. And that's kind of how the like spirit of that village has been started, because even though you may not have what you need today, you'll have there's always going to be more tomorrow.
With a few thousand dollars more, some University of Arkansas students will help make sure there is clean water there one day. And then more tomorrow. To learn more about Arkansas Engineers Abroad, you can go to arkansasengineersabroad.blogspot.com.
It is Tuesday, February 18th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Okay, so I thought curling was something you did with a curling iron. What do I know?
It is something you do with a curling iron, but you can also do it in a colder climate.
Yes, you can also do it on ice. And if you yearn to be a Winter Olympian, you can go learn to curl at the Jones Center in Springdale.
These are lovely folks. I spent some time with them a few years ago.
Kevin Kinder went out and spent some time with them. They were doing a corporate retreat. So they were using curling as a team building exercise.
Very cool.
And we had that story last Thursday in our town. But he gave us a vocabulary that you need to learn. And so since the Olympic finals are the 20th and the 21st, which is what, Thursday and Friday? Then you need to learn these words. The house is the target. Mm-hmm. And it has a radius of 6 feet. The button is the center of the target. The weight is used to reference the velocity of the stone and not the actual weight of the stone. Are you confused yet?
I'm with you still.
A bonspiel is a curling tournament. A burned stone is a stone in motion touched by a player. A pebble is water droplets you apply to the ice to reduce the friction between the stone and the ice.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
The end is a portion of a curling game that is completed when each team has thrown 8 stones or the score has been decided. And games are usually 10 ends unless overtime is required. The hammer is the last stone thrown in any given end. The skip is the team captain and the last person to throw. And the slider is slippery material you add to the sole of your shoe so you can fall down more easily. Okay, I made that last part
up. You did.
You can find out more about the club by calling the Jones Center at 756-8090 or Mark Curtis at 925-2628. And the club meets from 5 to 7 on Sundays, and you can just show up and find out more about curling.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is our tech ambassador, Ty Dennison, who is also the director of technology for Grand Slam Performance Associates. Welcome back.
Morning, Kyle.
You're here to help me, and I'm assuming some others, understand this term that comes up about once a year or so, it seems, net neutrality.
Net neutrality is basically all data that passes through the internet is just ones and zeros, and so it shouldn't matter if it's video or photos.
So whether it's my stock quote or it's a clip from an old sitcom, doesn't matter who it's from, should be treated equally.
That's right.
But let's say I am a big provider of data. Let's say I'm Netflix or I'm Amazon Prime or I'm someone like that, and I want to make sure the people who want to see are able to see it. I'd like to pay a little bit more so I can get through always, and maybe at the expense of some other information.
That's part of what net neutrality is obviously against, is that kind of favoritism. What happens then is people who are content providers that don't have the same power to make deals with the big ISPs that Netflix has, their content gets their content becomes kind of second class citizens. And so the concern is that we're turning our internet service, or if left in the hands of the ISPs without regulation, they're going to turn internet into cable TV.
I was about to say, it sounds like the model for cable or satellite television, where this package gives me this, but if I want ESPN 9, I pay more.
Exactly. And so that's kind of where the proposed non-neutral internet would go is, oh, you're a – and they already hint toward it with their suggestions for how much bandwidth you need. Oh, you want to do these things, you only need this much bandwidth. Oh, you want to do these things, well, you'll probably want this much bandwidth. That's their suggestion. They use that to try and sell you more bandwidth. Most people know you can still watch Netflix at a pretty low bandwidth because Netflix has made it a priority to get you their content as easily as possible, so they'll adjust quality to match your bandwidth unless you just got really bad connection. But where they would go in the future is, oh, your streaming content, you have to have the streaming package.
Right.
Oh, you're uploading photos, you have to have the uploading photos feature to your internet package. And that's where those businesses would go.
Could go.
Right. It had the potential to go. That's where it's speculated they will go. That's kind of where they've shown their hand that they're headed. And they say that obviously they need to do that to support the infrastructure. As the internet grows and we do more things on the internet, there's obviously an added infrastructural cost. And so those who are against the regulations of net neutrality say that regulation stops these businesses from being able to compensate for the increased demand, and therefore it's, in their mind, blocking growth because they can't build more into the infrastructure.
So there is infrastructure concern that will have to be addressed, right?
Right. And so that's part of those who are opposed to net neutrality say that's how the market, once we allow businesses to regulate content and change the way they charge things, that's how that infrastructure will be produced. Others argue that it will happen organically. People think of, say, like the Google Fiber initiative and things like that. Well, the issue with Google Fiber initiative is then Google becomes our savior and we're yet again in the pockets of don't be evil Google.
Well, yeah. Let's say someone is listening to this and said, well, darn straight, I pay a monthly fee to Netflix. I want to be able to see that first season of Hawaii Five-0 whenever I want without interruptions. So net neutrality would keep me from doing that.
The argument against that is that when we remove net neutrality, it will allow some benefits, but that it will actually hinder growth. It will hinder the ability for the next Netflix to be growing. In the same way that we have a monopoly of internet of ISPs, we have a monopoly of cable companies, content will be governed in the same way, and that the big players will get bigger, the small players won't be able to grow, and so that removes some of the free-flowing, enterprising nature of the internet when content providers can make deals with internet service providers to prioritize their content. Or on the other side of that, there's freedom of speech issues when people rally behind a cause one way or the other, saying this company is this person's producing hate speech. We need to, and enough people go to that ISP and report that, then they will obviously feel obligated, because they have the power to do so, to do something about that, and then it becomes a freedom of speech issue. So that those are some other concerns when we remove the neutrality, the quote-unquote neutrality of the internet, is that we put that power in the hands of the ISP. So realistically, it's about, where does the power go? Do we want the power to be in the hands of the FCC, or do we want the power to be in the hands of the ISPs?
It seems that as though some companies are trying to walk a fine line, because they know so many of the people who have supported them from the beginning and used them are in favor of net neutrality. So some have come out and said, hey, we're not going to do any of this. We're going to follow the net neutrality, if not laws, ethic.
That's part of the ethos of the internet, is this free enterprise kind of Wild West mentality, and those who've made their living and produced things on the internet have done so with that in mind. And so it's very anti-internet to regulate the internet. And so you see all the big companies that, they may not have started to say a whole lot at first, but once the noise kind of hit a certain point, obviously everyone had to jump on board to save face. And so this takes us back 2 years to SOPA and PIPA. We had people, there was a quiet stirring happening, and then all of a sudden, once it hit mass, every person who has a business on the internet, with the exception of, I think, GoDaddy, jumped on board to be against it and blacked out their services as a way of protesting SOPA and PIPA to cast it down. And those companies that walked the fine line, you know, they were content to let the protests, the dissidents, I suppose you could say, make their case, until it became apparent that they needed to put their hat in the ring. And when they did so, they sided with the internet, because they're an internet company. But obviously they know that if it goes through, they're not going to be hurt. So people like Google, who will present themselves, who are pro-internet, obviously, but wouldn't be hurt by a measure like this and could actually benefit some, can go, well, we'll see, because we could use some of that priority YouTube action.
Isn't it true that Google and Amazon and Netflix and dozens of others who are getting, who are becoming wealthy or having a good business online, if net neutrality laws hadn't been in effect 8 or 9 or 15 years ago, they would have had a hard time getting to the point where they are now?
Oh, absolutely. If net neutrality wasn't kind of the de facto operating way when Google was around, we'd all still be using America Online or Yahoo Search.
Friendster.
Yeah, precisely. All of those things that were dominant then would have had the power to lock up things and prioritize themselves more than they were able to. But because that wasn't the internet service providers weren't thinking that way. So it's not as if net neutrality was established back in. We just didn't know what we had.
Tyrell Dennison is the Director of Technology for Grand Slam Performance Associates and is our Tech Ambassador. Ty, as always, thank you.
Yeah, you bet, Kyle.
In about 11 minutes, the conversation about the future of the private option in Arkansas continues. Roby Brock talks to a pair of Republican representatives from the same county. One supporting the option, the other opposes it.
The Federal Affordable Care Act and its possible effects on individuals will be the subject of a series of information sessions in Fayetteville. The seminars are sponsored by the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce and its Healthcare Committee. The first series of meetings will include information about how to enroll in plans. The seminars will be held at the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce on Mountain Street in downtown Fayetteville. There are three this week: tomorrow afternoon from 2 until 4, Thursday morning from 10 until noon, and then again Thursday evening from 5:30 until 7:30.
If the past few days' warmer temperatures have you seeking outdoor opportunities, we have some suggestions. A cleanup of the middle fork of the White River will take place Saturday afternoon from 1 until 5. Volunteers should meet at Bunch Park in Elkins at 1 Saturday afternoon. After the cleanup, there will be a free meal and door prizes at Bunch Park. The cleanup is sponsored by the Beaver Watershed Alliance. For more, you can call 274-8903.
The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks will combine the outside and inside from February 28th through March 2nd. The fourth annual Orchards in the Garden show and sale will be inside the event hall at BGO. The show, sponsored by the Orchid Society of the Ozarks, opens Friday the 28th with a reception that night from 6 until 8. The show will continue Saturday and Sunday, March 1st and 2nd, beginning at 9 a.m. each day. You can learn more by going to the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks website at bgozarks.org or by calling 750-2620.
Hobbs State Park will dedicate an entire day to Aldo Leopold, the author of the seminal book Sand County Almanac. The book has been credited with having a major influence on how Americans view the environment. The Saturday, March 1st Aldo Leopold Day includes a live songbird research demonstration, Dutch oven demonstrations, hikes, a documentary film about the author, and more. All of the events are at the Hobbs State Park and Conservation Area in Benton County and are free.
We have an update on a story Antoinette did last week. The River Valley Regional Food Bank created the Have a Super Sunday Weekend program in an effort to make sure school children in the Fort Smith School District had food to last over the three-day President's Weekend. Ken Kupchick with the food bank says more than 7,600 cans of soup were donated to the food bank, enough soup to ensure that children at all 17 participating elementary schools and one junior high school received food for the weekend. He says that two of three children in the elementary schools are enrolled in free or reduced lunch programs, and more than 90% of the students at the junior high are also in the program.
Speaking of soup, the annual Soup Sunday event sponsored by the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families is this Sunday afternoon at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Springdale. More than two dozen area restaurants will be creating soups for the event that begins Sunday afternoon from 4 until 7.
Finally, the weather should cooperate so area college softball and baseball teams can play this week. The University of the Ozarks baseball team is hosting Hendricks this afternoon. The University of Arkansas softball team will host Northwestern State tomorrow at 5 at Bogle Park. The UAFS Lions baseball team has a doubleheader at home Friday against Oklahoma Panhandle State, first pitch at 1. And the University of Arkansas baseball team hosts a three-game series with Eastern Illinois beginning Friday afternoon at 3:05. Meanwhile, the Razorback men's basketball team is in Bud Walton tomorrow night at 8 against South Carolina. The women's Razorback basketball team hosts Vanderbilt Thursday night at 7. And the UAFS men's and women's basketball teams are at home Thursday night against Newman University for games at 5:30 and 7:30. And the Razorback gymnastics team will host Kentucky Friday night at 7 in Barnhill Arena.
Last fall, the city of Fayetteville competed in the International Compassion Games, becoming one of 26 cities worldwide to earn the title of a compassionate city. Mayor Lionel Jordan has proclaimed February as a month of compassion for the city. The organization Compassion Fayetteville has put together a series of compassion-related events throughout the month. On Ozarks at Large, we're including a few stories of compassion this month, including Dorothy Marcy's story.
Well, around 1958, when Central High School was being integrated and the National Guard was being called out, my brothers and I integrated the College of the Ozarks in Clarksville, Arkansas. They went a year before I did because I graduated in 1959 from high school. But there were so many things we were not allowed to do, and I was angry during that whole time that I went to school there because we were not allowed to live in the dorm. My brother, who was the quarterback in high school, was not allowed to play football. I, who had been a majorette with the band, was not allowed to be in the band. We had to find housing in town, you know, because we couldn't live in the dorms. We were just so restricted. And the answer that we were always given was, we've never done that before. So, and the town was extremely hostile to having us there. For years, I would get alumni requests for money, information about homecoming, and I'm not donating to these people the way they treated me. I'm not going to their homecoming. I don't have any positive feelings toward that school. Well, 50 years later, they did a program to honor that moment when they integrated their schools. That was when I found out why we were treated that way. My brother went to the event, and I couldn't go. He was one of the speakers. He's now a doctor in Little Rock. He sent me the program. The president of the college at that time was a man named Dr. Drummond. He and other faculty members, I suppose, had decided that even in the atmosphere of 1958, the horribly hostile, cruel, and hateful atmosphere in our state and in our country, that there was still something that they could do. They could still do the right thing no matter what, in spite of many of their contemporaries on campus did not want us there. And the people in the town were terribly hostile. I have many stories of just walking down the street and being just hit with anger and, you know, hostile behavior. But the explanation was they quietly integrated. They did not want the National Guard coming to their school. They did not want the citizens of Clarksville up in arms and rising up against us. They did not want to attract violence to us. And so they kept us low-key. They never put us in any position where we were visible, like the quarterback on the football team or the majorette in the band, those kinds of things. They protected us, and that protection felt harsh because we didn't understand it. So that melted my heart. But even within that hostile environment, we were poor. Our parents could not send us to college. I served food in the cafeteria every day. I got grants and loans and scholarships, and so did my brothers. I made my clothes to go to college. I was not the best seamstress. I had one pair of shoes. Halfway through the year, I noticed a girl, a white girl, who had the same kind of shoes that I did, and I said to my brother, "This is weird. Her shoes still look new, and my shoes are worn out." And he said, "She has more than one pair." I didn't know people had more than one pair of shoes. I had very little. But the dean of girls was also the chairman of the chairperson of the history department. I think her name was Dr. Harris. But she called me in one day to her office. I thought I was in trouble. I didn't know what was going on. And she opened a door adjacent to her office to a big room full of clothes and shoes and coats and all kinds of things to wear. And there was no discussion. She said, "Take your time, take anything you want," and left me there. Initially, I was humiliated. I was humiliated for that someone noticed my need, but I was grateful. And I did take my time, and I found clothes that I needed and shoes that I needed. And she never mentioned it again. There was no discussion. There was no talking down to me. Nothing. It just happened. It was done. It was never referred to again. She never treated me as if that had happened. To me, that was compassion. She and Dr. Drummond changed my life. I don't feel the hostility and anger. I never felt it toward her. She was like a ray of light in a dark world to me. But I didn't know that she was functioning within a ray of light that I couldn't see. And that's my story.
Dorothy Marcy of Fayetteville shared her story of compassion during this month, which has been designated by the City of Fayetteville as a month of compassion. For more information about events related to the month, you can visit compassionfayetteville.wordpress.com.
And tomorrow on Ozarks, we continue our once-a-month series of spaces in our listening area.
As you saw, we're in a little building right now. There's not much room. We've had up to 100 kids in that room, which is really tight. This will give us an opportunity to have larger groups of classes. classes and grades, whole schools come out.
We'll visit a space in transition in Cave Springs as it moves from a church to an information center for the Illinois River Watershed Partnership. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.
In Meg Wolitzer's latest novel, The Interestings, which begins at a performing arts summer camp, she writes that jealousy is when you think, I want what you have. Envy is when you think, I want what you have, but I want to take it away so you can't have it. On the next Fresh Air, Wolitzer talks about jealousy and envy when friends are more talented and successful than you. Join us.
NPR's Fresh Air begins this evening at 6 on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. In a few hours, the Arkansas House of Representatives is expected to vote on a funding package for the private option. The measure, originally passed by both sides of the legislature last year, uses federal dollars to help expand the number of low-income Arkansans covered by Medicaid. This week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked to two state representatives on opposite sides of the issue. Both are Republicans, and both are from the same central Arkansas county, Saline. Roby invited Representatives Andy Mayberry and Ken Hammer to sit down and explain their reasons for either supporting or opposing the private option. The discussion took place on the Sunday morning TV program Capital View on KARK-TV in Little Rock. Roby and his co-host David Goines began the conversation by asking Representative Hammer what he expects when the vote begins in the Arkansas House.
I think the vote is going to be very close. I think some people are just waiting to the last minute to make sure that they hear all the information that's necessary in order to make a vote that they feel that they can defend. And as we have found this week in all the meetings that we've been attending, it seems like every day there's a little bit of information that comes out. Of course, there's some positioning too with the amendment to the bills as to try to make the private option a little bit easier for folks to vote on. So I think that it's going to be a very close vote. Actually, I would not want to try to call it right now, to be honest with you.
Representative Mayberry, what's your take on just what's developed over this last week and what you expect to happen on Tuesday?
The over-under is 75, and I'm not saying which one I'm going with right now in terms of where I think it'll be. I think that's anybody's call at this point. As Representative Hammer said, this is kind of similar to the debate that we just had, back in the spring in the general session, but there's, some new twists to it now. Obviously, we've had implementation. We've got some data to look at now. Not a lot. It was implemented in January 1, and so let's kind of roll in from there. And then with the amendments that have been added on, it made it more palatable probably to some, and to others, they didn't like the amendments and made it less palatable. So you don't know if you've picked up some votes, if perhaps you lost some votes as well.
Representative Mayberry, you voted yes on appropriation last year. Are you sticking essentially with that?
At this point, I would still vote for the funding of the private option.
And yes, Representative Hammer, you were on the opposite side last year. Are you still essentially there, or what's your thought?
At this time, I'm still against the appropriation. The problem with the appropriation also is that there has been a movement. In fact, there was a bill that was run the other day to try to split out so that it would not be so complicated. But unfortunately, there's no movement on the other side. And if the appropriation doesn't go through, then there's going to be some long-term consequences, and that adds to the scenario as well. But at this time, even with some of the amendments, I would have to say, as of today, right now, that I would be no.
And another thing that you have to look at here as well, if I may interject for just a moment, mm-hmm. is that if it does pass through the House on Tuesday, then you're going down to the Senate, and you have yep. no idea what's going to happen down there. As of right now, it doesn't look as though they have the votes, but who knows?
Representative Carter, Speaker of the House, said that earlier this week that he's, as far as he's going, the negotiations are over with me. That was a direct quote from Speaker Carter. So this thing gets voted on Tuesday. It fails. There's nothing else to negotiate? Or do you think that there is an opportunity to go back to joint budget and to find some other alternative and see if there's another way to do this? Or do you think that it ends at that point in time and then you guys start crafting a budget without the funding for the private option? Representative Hammer.
I would say go back to the old cliche, never say never. There were some attempts in the Rules Committee this past week, I believe it was, in order to get some of the language amended that would at least build in some things that would make it more comfortable for those of us at this time that are against it in order to be able to at least give weightier consideration to it. I would hate to say never, given the fact that those options, were not voted in.
We're talking about like Senator Hendren's wind down idea or something different than
Senator Hendren's wind down idea,
which would basically the private option does go away at the end of 2014, but it's not it doesn't just fall off the cliff in July, essentially, right?
Right. And one thing, too, if you were in one of the meetings or if y'all been tracking one of the meetings, we've been told all along that if the private option goes away, that everybody that has their private options would lose them. And just even as recently as Friday, the question was asked in the budget hearings now that identified that if you're 100 to 138, that you might lose your private option plan,
but you go to the exchange.
You would go to the exchange, so it's not like they're going to be left totally out in the cold.
That's 14,000 or so out of 100,000. So a small percentage, but not total.
And you'd still have the donut hole of that 17% to 100% that those individuals.
About 85,000 people.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of folks.
Arkansas State Representatives Andy Mayberry and Ken Hammer, both Republicans from Saline County, discussed the private option with Roby Brock from Talk Business Arkansas this weekend. We also heard the voice of David Goins, Roby's co-host for the Sunday morning TV program Capital View, seen on KARK-TV in Little Rock. The House is scheduled to vote on the measure this afternoon. The vote in the Senate is expected later this week or next. Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest individual user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity, coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at aecc.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Dean's Market.
Dean's Market.
Mm-hmm. It's just north of Alma on Highway 71.
Okay. Any special reason we're saluting Dean's Market?
Because it felt like it.
It's a very good reason.
Awesome.
A couple of things to add. Washington County Judge Marilyn Edwards has issued a burn ban for Washington County. Outdoor burning of any type prohibited. And Sinbad, the stand-up comic, is coming to Walton Arts Center on April 12th. Just announced today. Tickets go on sale Friday morning.
All right. How was your weekend?
Good and busy. Went to see Good People, the Theater Squared production.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Two thumbs up.
Cool. Again, funny, not funny.
There are some laugh out loud moments.
Mm-hmm.
Very much.
So it's dramedy, right? Because it's serious, but it's funny.
Yes.
So dramedy.
Yes.
Okay.
And one of the best scripts. I mean, you understand why it was nominated for a Tony.
Oh, cool.
The acting is great. The sets are amazing.
Awesome. Good deal. I'll have to get that on my calendar.
And you and I both went to baseball, though separate times.
Yes.
Separate
places. Went Sunday afternoon. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
So nice. I don't know that I've ever been to opening weekend for the Razorbacks, but probably because it's usually now and cold.
Right.
But it was really pretty, and it was such a nice day. So I'm glad we made it. I'm glad they won. So
saw part of Friday and Saturday games, and I'll be there some this weekend as well.
Excellent.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You and Christina tomorrow with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a good Tuesday.